And welcome back to Fully Equipped, Golf.com's gear-focused podcast, where we take weekly PGA Tour news and relate it to golfers of all skill levels. I'm Tim Brion, Senior Vice President of TruSpec Golf, joined by Jonathan Wall, Managing Editor for Golf.com. Jonathan, what's up, buddy?
Professor, I'm buried in boxes here in Dallas. I wish you could see my office right now. It's disgusting. I have club boxes
new
everywhere.
Product?
New product all over the place. Clubs, balls. I actually went on my front porch yesterday and I was like, oh, here's a box. I'm just gonna pick it up. And I nearly like pulled my my back out of place because the box was so heavy and I'm like, what the heck is this? Opened it up. Eight dozen golf balls. Eight dozen.
So you you won't need to head into the woods anytime.
I know. I was just about to say, dang it, you actually beat me to the punch on that one because that was where I was going with it. But but yeah, that's what I was thinking. I'm like, well, won't have any issues with the golf balls, but eight dozen. It's officially
have you unboxed anything that made you say, wow, I can't wait to go check this out?
Yeah, there's been a couple of things. Unfortunately, they are exciting, but they're righty, which always poses a problem. Always poses a problem for this lefty over here. So they're pretty to look at. Yeah, a couple of ones that I think are going to surprise some people because until recently, I didn't expect that this manufacturer was coming out with anything. I'm teasing it just because I don't want to give anything away. But yeah, there are a couple of products that are going to surprise people. Coming out, I would say, in about a week.
If those pieces find their way to East Tierra Buena Lane here in Scottsdale, I will.
Yeah,
not,
I was about to say,
I won't pitch a fight.
Yeah, I'm going to send them your way just so somebody can actually get a chance to test them because that's the worst part about this. The launch season is most of the time I'm just taking photos and looking over gear and calling engineers and trying to get the lowdown on the product, but can never hit it, which is. It's very sad.
So really good week out on tour. You know, we had the Sony last week out in Hawaii. I always love watching that event. We've got a couple of tour notes regarding Brooks Koepka for the week. We've got a signing with Callaway on the agenda to talk about today. I heard Rory is investigating a hybrid as well. I know in last week's episode we discussed DJ and him putting a hybrid into play. Sounds like Rory McIlroy is also considering the same. We've got the official launch of the Maverick product from Callaway, specifically the drivers. So we've seen widespread adoption out on tour. We'll talk about Maverick for a little bit. And we've got an interview this week with Francesco Molinari. That should be great. So it should be a great episode of Fully Equipped. So just to lead off here, talking about Brooks and some of the changes in his bag. What have you heard this week has come out and what is going in?
Yeah, I actually really like the events that go on over in Abu Dhabi and Dubai because it's kind of like Christmas morning for me, Tim, because I check Getty on a pretty regular basis when I'm not out on tour. One of the great things now, and we haven't really mentioned this, and I'll just say it briefly, is I've got a new partner in crime over at Golf Magazine and golf.com. We hired Andrew Tursky to be the new senior editor for equipment and hired him away from the PGA Tour where I was before I joined golf. So really excited to have him on board, and he's actually out in Palm Springs capturing a bunch of content. But when it comes to Abu Dhabi and Dubai, neither one of us are making that trip over there to check out the gear. So it's always a big surprise when you kind of get on Getty and start looking around. And one of the first things that I noticed was there was a photo of Brooks Koepka, but he wasn't on a golf course. It was at a sponsor event, but I just happened, just being the gear nerd that I am, to spy that he had his golf bag in front of him, and I zoomed in, and what did I see but a new driving iron, the Nike Vaporfly Pro 3 iron that's been in his bag for eons, it feels like, has now been replaced by a TaylorMade P790 UDI. I was really surprised, Tim, just because that club seemed to withstand every change that Brooks made to the bag. You know, he's made wholesale changes since he departed from Nike with the equipment part of his deal. But that club's hung around. I remember last year at Bay Hill, he had a Mizuno JPX Hot Metal Pro. And I really thought that one was going in the bag. It was a custom job, and it never did. So yeah, I mean, the possibility of putting P790, we've talked about this before. There's not a ton of difference in the technology with these driving irons. They're made to do one thing, which is, especially for the better players who are looking for an iron profile, it's supposed to, you know, flight the ball with a relatively penetrating trajectory, keep spin down. And I think that's probably what Brooks has been seeing. But, you know, he was on the mend, and I guess he's been busy working on gear. Also saw that he had TaylorMade sim driver in the bag. Not really surprised there because he was an M5 previously. But changes going on with Brooks's gear. And look, beginning of the year, so we'll see what happens as he gets closer to the first major of the year. But at least it seems like right out of the gate, he's making some changes.
So on that P790 UDI product, first and foremost, that thing is a howitzer. We see it all the time in fittings at TruSpec. We introduced driving irons to our matrix over this last year in 2019, as we've seen a demand for them increase. Quite a few, you know, skilled players, higher speed players, are really looking for utility options, utility iron options in the bag. They don't like hybrids because they either go too high or go too far to the left. They don't like high-lofted fairway woods because usually they'll spin too much and go too high. So the utility iron has been a great addition to the bag for a lot of, you know, players that are a little lower in handicap that don't want to hit it either too high or too far to the left. And so it's not surprising to see this start to filter its way out on the PGA Tour. You know, I think so many tour players have been biased against hybrid clubs for so long, mostly because of the left features or pull or draw bias features that most of those products have.
Hey, Tim,
as we've mentioned in the past. Yeah.
Really quick, where do you stand on, you know, I've had some golfers ask me before, should I keep using the same shaft that I'm using in my irons in a driving iron, or should I use something different? Should I try graphite? Where do you kind of stand on the shaft when it comes to a driving iron?
A lot of it depends upon how the driving iron is performing related to the irons. So with driving irons in general, you're going to get a more forgiving club to hit. In many cases, it's going to spin maybe a little bit less than their iron counterparts, than their traditional iron counterparts would. And then trajectory profiles, you know, you're going to see more ball speed, potentially a flatter flight, even though you have a little bit more mass down low on the sole. So what I would say is pay attention to your launch window on whatever your terminal iron is. So let's say you're playing up to a 5-iron, and then you go to a 4 utility iron. On that 5-iron, I would look at your launch and spin rates and carry distance and peak height and things like that. If you don't have access to a launch monitor, then, you know, I don't suggest going it alone if you don't have
access to
a launch monitor. So if you do have a launch monitor, you can kind of take a look at the 5-iron performance, see how the 4 utility performance is relative to that as far as peak height and spin rate and things along those lines. If you don't have access to a launch monitor, I would find a qualified professional, hopefully a club fitter, come see us at TruSpec. And, you know, we can identify what the best shaft will be with that specific utility iron head. In general, with most utility iron setups I've seen, both for high speed and mid speed players, for highly skilled as well as folks that are a little bit higher in their handicaps, most of the time we're picking a different shaft in the utility iron than we do in the rest of the iron.
Interesting.
So a lot of times it's a carbon fiber, graphite, you know, something that's going to be more like a hybrid shaft. And the other thing that you got to consider is that the hosel diameter for utility clubs, the specific model that you're trying to play, what is that hosel diameter and what type of shafts are eligible to go into that head, so to speak. So with most utility irons, they will receive a tip diameter, you know, for most hybrid shafts. So you have the option of using either hybrid shafts or iron shafts in them. But most of the time we find that carbon fiber is probably going to benefit the player a little bit more. You know, just with a lot of players that we see that don't have, you know, crazy speed, if I would call them or categorize them as mid to higher speed players, then those players need the ball flight characteristics that carbon fiber gives them with a little bit more launch. So, that's kind of where I would go. Now, as far as you know, this 790 UDI that Brooks put in play, we've worked with a few players that have these in play, and they just go forever. It's an amazing club to use as an auxiliary club off of tee boxes. You know, usually as far as, you know, distance, these guys are, the tour players are getting 260, 270, with the higher speed players out of some of these utilities.
That's just stupid. That's stupid distance.
Yeah. So they're basically hitting two irons, and not too many three utilities are being used, but a lot of two utilities are being used. And those two utility irons are going 260, 270, and for the really, really long players, almost 280 yards. So it definitely fits a need on those shorter par fours. Instead of using a three wood to tee off with, which is something that most players would have done in the past, a lot of them are going to this utility iron setup instead. So that's you know, it's not surprising to see a 790 UDI in the bag, but as you mentioned, this Vaporfly 3-iron from Nike has stayed in that bag. It's withstood a lot of change over the last 3-4 years for Brooks. But, you know, everything has a time in its place, and it sounds like the Vaporfly 3-iron has seen its best days. So, and then in addition to that, we've obviously got the Sim driver in. You know, Sim was one of the best products that we saw in club test. You know, at this point in the season, pretty much all of the different tour staffs have adopted and put into play some of the new products that have launched, whether it be Callaway with Maverick, Sim with TaylorMade, Speed Zone with Cobra. I will say this. I think this is one of the strongest driver years we've had in quite a few years. When you look from top to bottom,
that's a pretty strong
quality
take
of driver designs. Yeah, I think it's one of the best driver years we've had. So if you've been on the fence for purchasing a new driver for a couple years, you've gone to a couple of demo days and you can't really find anything that's much better, this may be the year that you get a new driver in play, folks, because I think there are a lot of options out there. And they're not just options that are maximizing performance when you hit it out of the middle. It's options that are helping the everyday golfer when they don't hit it out of the middle of the face or when the face isn't square. So this is a great year for driver products. I'm very excited about it throughout the rest of this year for all of our customers at TruSpec, because I think we're going to be able to find some options for players that best, you know, products that they've seen in the recent years, the last two or three. So the next tour topic for the week I wanted to get into was a Callaway signing. So who signed with Callaway?
Yeah, Matt Wallace signed with Callaway. Multi-year deal, clubs, hat, bag, kind of the whole shebang, as you typically expect when it comes to the bigger manufacturers. When you're signing a deal with them, it's usually for everything. I know there are a few, Ping being one of the exceptions. I mean, the putter for them is kind of one of those. It's a must have in a deal unless you're Tony Finau. I know they made an exception for Tony, but Tony's an exceptional player, and that was a really smart decision on their part to kind of shake things up a bit with those contracts. But yeah, Matt signed. He's coming over from Ping's, won 4 times on the European Tour going back to 2017. We've seen him a little bit more on the PGA Tour over the last few years as he's started putting together some pretty solid finishes. But, you know, I would venture to say that this is probably the biggest signing of the signing period. And we kind of talked about this on the last episode, Tim. I think it just kind of goes to show you that, you know, Matt Wallace is a good player. He's 31st ranked player in the world, but it's been very quiet so far. And I don't see that changing between, you know, now. You know, I remember last year with Francesco Molinari, he signed officially with Callaway at Bay Hill. And, you know, that's about as late as you're going to see a guy sign. But again, he was a free agent. It's been very quiet. You know, you've got Matt Wallace, you've got Ches Reavie to PXG, you've got Kevin Tway to Wilson. I know the Patrick Reed signing a deal, although I don't think anything's really been put out there officially, signing that iron deal with Grindworks. He has the Grindworks staff bag now, but been really quiet. But I think Matt's a great signing. And one of the things that I like about this one is he's a guy who has a big presence on the European Tour, and this is one of the things that I've actually found out about when it comes to Ping, is, you know, they typically will sign a big name player from different parts of the globe because they have a presence in those areas. And, you know, Callaway already has a pretty big presence with a lot of the guys that they currently have on staff. You know, their big name is still Phil Mickelson, but it's always good to have a presence over in Europe, and Matt Wall certainly gives them that on a more regular basis. So I like the signing, kind of a shrewd deal, and one that I think is going to kind of pay dividends down the road, because the way Matt's game is trending, I think he brings a lot to the table for Callaway.
For sure. I mean, a young player, I consider anybody under the age of 30 to be young.
He's 29. I guess
that shows my age a little bit. Yeah, 29. So when you look at the TaylorMade stable, obviously they have hitched their wagon to some, you know, phenomenal young athletes with Colin Morikawa, with Matt Wolf.
You're thinking TaylorMade, Tim.
You know,
you're thinking TaylorMade.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, TaylorMade hitched their wagon to some of these younger players, so I'm sure that that's something that Callaway is looking to do, is kind of refreshing their staff.
Yeah, I mean,
potentially add some young talent on there. I mean, we saw Akshay Bhatia.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Students, yeah. Sign, so
he's and that kind of does go to show that they've got a little bit of a youth movement. But you know, Callaway's done a nice job of finding guys that seem to be on the rise. You know, I kind of go back to a guy like Aaron Wise, for example. You know, I still think Aaron Wise is going to be a fantastic player. He started out really hot. I still think he's kind of still finding his way to some extent, but he's kind of a little bit of the future, I think, for Callaway and what they're looking for, some of these young bombers. But again, you know, Matt Wallace, I think for more than anything, it just gives him a presence in a different area of the globe. So to have a guy like him on your staff, I think it's positives all around.
For sure. And with that, let's get into our third tour topic of the week. And this is about Mr. Rory McIlroy. What's Rory doing with his gear these days, Jonathan?
We should just play the clip from last week with DJ. You know, it's crazy to think that we're going from one big bomber adding a hybrid to the bag to another. It looks like, and again, nothing is official until Rory steps on the first tee on Thursday at Torrey Pines here in a couple of weeks. But I did find it interesting. There was an interview that he did here recently with the Irish Golfer, and he mentioned to them that he tested out TaylorMade's new SimMax hybrid, the same hybrid that Dustin Johnson used at Kapalua, and had one built up, had never tried a rescue from what I was told from TaylorMade before, and just kind of thought, you know what the heck, and saw a really tight dispersion with some pretty decent distance. And even though he said that he's a bit of a traditionalist, he just couldn't believe the numbers he was seeing. So he picks it up, takes it home, and then lo and behold, I'm just kind of searching around on the internet and find that Rory's bag setup on TaylorMade's website has a SimMax hybrid listed there. So it looks like Rory and DJ, at least for the early part of the season, could be SimMax hybrid users. And one of the interesting things, Tim, that I saw that Rory said was, you know, this is going to be a course-dependent club. And that's nothing new for Rory. He's typically bounced between a P790 2-iron and a 5-wood. And those have been his clubs depending on the golf course. And he said it's kind of a similar situation here. And I think it could be a great option for, especially for Torrey Pines South, where if he hits it in the rough, you know, hybrids have been a great club, especially for golfers that struggle to get the ball back and play out of the rough. You know, a hybrid is a great option because of the wider sole and the ability to get the ball up in the air. So I like it as an early season option. And one of the funny things he said is he thinks that the SimMax hybrid, he said it's a 3-iron that's as easy to hit as a 7. And I think a lot of golfers probably to some extent feel that way. You know, that's the reason why they're removing their traditional long irons and putting hybrids in the bag, because they're more forgiving. They launch the ball higher. You're going to get that spin, that drop and stop that you're looking for if you're going to be trying to reach a green in two. And that's what, you know, a mid handicapper wants. But again, that's not really what Rory is looking for. One of the big things that Dustin had mentioned that I'm sure Rory is seeing too is eliminating that left miss. You know, that was one, and you mentioned it during the last podcast, which was this fairway or this hybrid, I'm sorry, probably has a little bit of a flatter lie angle, which is going to help eliminate that miss. So again, kind of cool to see some big names trying a club that I think for the most part had really started to be phased out on tour. We really have started to see a rise in the utility iron, driving iron, however you want to call it, usage out on the PGA Tour. And now we're kind of seeing a couple of big names add hybrids. If they play well, I would not be surprised if you see other guys maybe give a hybrid a try this season.
You know, hybrids have such a reputation for being clubs that kind of target the older demographic, you know, really anybody over the age of 50, I would say. We look at what some of the Champions Tour players have done with hybrids in play. You know, the one that really comes to mind is Dana Quigley. Dana Quigley was a club pro for many years, a really good club pro, and then, you know, tried his hand at playing for a few years, never really could make a go of it. One of Dana's issues is that he hits the ball very, very low and without a lot of spin. And then added, you know, hybrids into play. This is going back about 15 years ago. And he took the Champions Tour by storm, largely. You look at his success, you know, with a bag full of hybrids, more or less, in play. And it really, you know, it really helped him achieve a level of success that he had never experienced before. But, you know, when you look at the mid to faster speed players under the age of 50, you know, under an 18 handicap, I think that there's at least we see it all the time with TruSpec, but there's a bit of a negative stigma attached to hybrids, and that those younger, faster speed players, due to one reason or another, they kind of view hybrids as clubs for somebody that is not as accelerated as far as their skill level. Or they view hybrids as something being for somebody with a lot slower speed, a lot older in age. So what we see these tour players doing, considering hybrids and actually, you know, mentioning how good they've been and what they're seeing, you know, for performance, I can't express this enough to all players that are listening that think that they're either too good or too fast to be using hybrids. Most of the times that's not the case.
Do you use a hybrid? Do you have a hybrid?
I do not. I use a utility iron. I used to use a hybrid that interchangeably. So I had an Adams Idea hybrid back in the day.
Such a good club.
And before that,
I loved that one.
Remember Nikent?
Oh,
remember
yeah.
Nikent hybrids? Those things were amazing. I still can't believe somebody hasn't gobbled up some of the Nikent's technology and designs as far as, you know, the way that some of their club head shapes. Their clubs look so good for being, you know, what characteristically most people don't like the look of hybrids. But those Nikent hybrids were amazing back in the day. And Adams, obviously, they were kind of industry leading with their hybrid designs, especially for better players for many, many years. Nowadays, you know, you've got a multitude of hybrids that are available across all categories. Kind of interesting story. Back when I worked for Ben Hogan Company, was doing R&D work for Ben Hogan Company many years ago. And we actually designed the industry's first hybrid, what would largely be considered the industry's first hybrid. It's called a CFT. I don't know. Do you even remember the Hogan CFT hybrid, Jonathan?
I don't even remember that one, Tim. It's a first.
So we designed this hybrid club, and in testing, I mean, we didn't even know what it was called. We didn't know if it was called higher. Like, the category didn't even have a name at this point. And in player testing, it was the most fantastically received club that I ever experienced during R&D player testing for any of the products I've been involved with testing. And because it was such a groundbreaking design and that we didn't even know what the category name was going to be, the folks decided not to launch it, and they wanted to let, you know, a few other manufacturers come to market with a product that was similar, so that they could kind of, you know, be the pioneer for that category. And once that category received a little bit more traction, then they would launch it. But so, you know, working with hybrids, what are hybrids designed to do? Hit it higher and hit it more left, make it a lot more forgiving than a 3-iron. Obviously, tour players don't need the higher benefit or the left benefit, but the forgiveness benefit relative to a 3-iron is something they're definitely interested in. So there are things that we can do in design, whether it be making the club flatter, messing around with the inertial properties and CG of the club so that it doesn't go quite as high. But I think that you're going to see more and more hybrids start to go into play, especially if a hybrid makes its way into DJ and Rory's bag and it stays in there throughout, you know, any length of time. I think you're going to start to see other tour players,
yeah, and,
especially
and
the faster speed players, put them in.
It's interesting because that usually happens. Anytime a player has success with a product, you typically see guys request it. And even if it's not something that they would have played before, I think it's a hot product, and guys are interested and they want to see if it's a magic bullet that's going to get them a win. So I think you're right. If either one of those guys has success with that club early on, I think we see a run on them here, at least for the first few months.
With that, let's get into our gear spotlight for the week. This week, we want to feature the new suite of products coming out of Callaway. I think a lot of our listeners are already privy to the name. It's called Maverick this year. And, you know, it's a great line of products that features drivers, fairways, hybrids, irons throughout, you know, so that it has a product in every category through the bag except for wedge and putter. But we saw some great things out of Maverick in club test. Apparently, this product is now widely adopted out on tour. Is that right, Jonathan?
Yeah, I mean it's already going into all the Callaway staffers' bags. Francesco Molinari, who we have an interview with this week, he recently put the new one in play. So, you know, and I think you're going to see Phil Mickelson adopting it soon. So it's going to be a popular club out there on tour, and it does a lot of the things. You know, if you want the like really deep nitty-gritty details, I wrote up a story on all the new metalwoods and the irons on golf.com if you want to go check those out. But I think, Tim, the most interesting thing about these clubs, and I'll be curious to kind of get your take on what you think is the most interesting part of this design, is the fact that they're kind of increasing the supercomputing capabilities that they initially rolled out with Epic Flash. So you went from having a lot of these driver faces were very conventional designs, thicker in the center, thinner towards the outer parts of the club face. And then Callaway said, hey, what if we have a supercomputer, artificial intelligence with machine learning come in and just spit something out? And I still remember seeing a quote from Dr. Alan Hocknell, who's Callaway's senior vice president for research and development. He said, you know, I couldn't even create this design if you gave me years to try. It's just specifically thicker in some spots where you would have thought that it would be thinner. The supercomputer, just through all of the different design iterations that it created over 15,000 in a six week period with Epic Flash. You know, you can learn a lot about a driver face, especially, and also a fairway wood face too, in that span of time with that many design iterations. Well, now they ramped up the supercomputing capabilities, so they're able to knock out 15,000 in a weekend. So think about how much more information and knowledge you can get about a driver face or a fairway wood face. And so that to me is what's interesting, is that they were able to take all of this knowledge that the supercomputer was able to compile and create specific face architectures for all three heads in the driver lineup. So Maverick, Maverick Max, and Maverick Sub-Zero, yes, they have a flash face design. It's this new flash face SS20 design, but each one of those heads is specifically designed with a face that accentuates the strengths of each one of those drivers. And I think that's what people need to realize is, you know, flash face was a revolutionary design with Epic Flash, but what they're doing with the face on Maverick, Maverick Max, and Maverick Sub-Zero is something that's completely different. So when you go pick up a Sub-Zero head, that face design is specifically made for players who are maybe looking for lower spin, maybe hit it more out of the center of the face, while, you know, a Maverick Max is going to be able to give you better ball speeds across the entire face. So for a golfer who's typically not hitting it out of the center, you're going to still benefit and see, you know, really good ball speeds, not see a whole lot of ball speed variation between the center and the outer perimeter of that face. So I think that to me is what is so impressive, is that they're not only using a supercomputer, but they're now finding new ways to use that supercomputer to come up with a new face design that's going to benefit a wider range of golfers.
Yeah, so three takeaways with that, Jonathan. First and foremost, this was something when I saw Epic Flash this last year, 2019, when we had a chance to go visit with the team from Callaway in 2018 looking at the Epic Flash product, and they showed us Flash Face, the very first question I asked to the Callaway design team is, well, does this open up Pandora's box for having multiple face designs across multiple products? Could you ever see a day where a player that wants a certain product, like specifically maybe Sub-Zero, and let's say that that player tends to hit the ball high and off the toe of the club, would you have a face engineered specifically just for somebody that hits it high off the toe? And their face is all kind of lit up. They didn't really
They were already
much,
two steps ahead of you, Tim.
Yeah, so and that opens up really intriguing concepts as far as club fitting, because now you're going to have potentially different faces to be able to fit somebody to. You're not just changing weighting or loft or things like that, but you actually pop a different face in there depending upon who that's going to get fit for. Now, this isn't something that I would anticipate at the retail level anytime soon, but I definitely could see this becoming a thing out on tour, that if you're a slight heel striker, that they have a specific AI flash face that's designed for that product for the folks that hit it on the heel. So that's one takeaway, is that we're seeing kind of new horizons here for design. Is any of this making the ball faster out of the center of the face? Quite frankly, no, it's not, because you have CT limitations that have been in place for multiple years now. So we're not talking about enhancing distance when you hit it in the middle of the face. We're talking about enhancing distance and potentially some accuracy, et cetera, when we hit it off the sides of the face with the face not square. And this is what we've talked about a few times on Fully Equipped, that I think driver design is moving into a direction that's actually going to benefit the average golfer more over the next 3 or 4 years than just trying to get top-end distance when you hit it in the middle. I think that that's something that's going to be great to see for the average amateur golfer, is designing clubs that are really more right in their wheelhouse than the stuff that's going to, optimize performance for just tour players.
Something interesting to bring up really quick that I just completely thought or forgot about, Tim, which is, we talk about, you really can't make the drivers any hotter than what they are out on like the PGA Tour, for instance, especially with the CT limits. One of the things that this new face, they're using a FS2S titanium. It's going to be thinner than what they've used in the past, but it's actually, with this new heat treatment that they're putting on the face, it actually makes the material more durable. And not only is it more durable, but it's able to maintain its CT target without creeping up. This is one of the things that you and I have talked about in previous podcasts, which is, a lot of these drivers that players on the PGA Tour are putting in play initially might have a CT that's within the legal limit. But over time, as they use it and that face starts to wear down, that face actually gets hotter. It doesn't go the other direction. And so Callaway was mentioning that because they're using this different titanium material for the face, the fact that it's lighter and it's stronger, they're able to maintain that CT and not have to worry about their drivers creeping up into the where it's going to be a yellow or a red if it gets tested on the PGA Tour. And I thought that was kind of interesting, because you can tell that not only are they looking at a product that's going to benefit the average golfer, but they're also looking at it as, okay, these clubs are going to be used out on the PGA Tour. We got to make sure that we have something that kind of eliminates this issue of how long can you use a driver before it becomes non-conforming.
Yeah, and for sure, it's all, when you're looking at some of what's happened over the last year with conforming drivers, it's definitely been one of the primary topics in the equipment world. And now that, there's a lot more attention being paid towards drivers conforming or not at the event sites, you're going to see a lot more attention from the OEMs on this, I would guess. A couple of things that were discussed between myself and the team over at Callaway is they're seeing a lot of traction with actually good players on the Maverick Max product. And the Maverick Max product, it's a driver product that in profile tends to be a little bit more draw biased. It's going to have slightly different characteristics as far as forgiveness and MOI and head shaping. And, you know, by and large, the Maverick Max product is something that you would profile a mid to higher handicap for. And yet they're seeing some of their tour players use this Maverick Max product with an open face. So they take a loft that's a little higher than what the player needs, and then they open the face and de-loft it. So they take the loft down, make the driver look less, you know, pull biased or draw biased. And some of these tour players are seeing fantastic results with Maverick Max. So for all you players out there that are interested in demoing some of these new products, if you're not coming to a True Spec to get fit for them and you're at a demo day, don't hesitate to ask the folks with you up on that demo day if you can try the Maverick Max product. Like I said, it's
that was probably the most surprising revelation was when you told me that. I mean, because I never would have thought that if somebody would have said, what are the two drivers out of those three that are going to be most used on the PGA Tour, I would have automatically said, well, Maverick and the Sub-Zero version. Never would have been the Max, because that's all you think about it as is it's a draw bias product that's going to help eliminate a slice. So I think that's maybe might be the most surprising. Yeah, no, that's what you're saying. And I think that's maybe the most surprising.
Last point to make here on Maverick before we continue on. What you said as far as consistent ball speeds over the entire club face, you know, that's exactly what we saw at a club test.
It's one of the most accurate the Max was.
Yeah, it was very consistent. So whether you hitting the ball off the toe or off the heel, we were getting very consistent results. And that's obviously very important for golfers. We didn't see a huge delta as far as distance away from the center line when you hit it off the toe versus off the heel. So you weren't getting, you know, ridiculous amounts of gear effect that were causing the ball to curve with a hook or a fade if you hit it off the sides of the face. But then the really, really encouraging thing is that hitting it off the toe or hitting it off the heel, you weren't losing tons of ball speed, exactly as, you know, the marketing teams over at Callaway are expressing through their marketing campaigns. But, you know, this is a case where the test results that we found actually reflected, you know, what the pitch for the product is, which is always nice to see. So I think Maverick is going to be a great, great product for them throughout the course of this year. It's important to understand that this Maverick product does not replace Epic Flash. It's in supplement to Epic Flash. So the Epic Flash driver products will remain in production throughout most of this year, at least into the summer. When we look at what is this Maverick product replacing, it's really a replacement to the Rogue series that Callaway has had out for a couple years now. So, and with that, let's get into our mailbag for the week. Jonathan, what do we have on mailbag?
Yeah, actually, Tim, this question is one that I want to get an answer from. So I'm going to have you kind of offer up your insight. And Nick Worthy wants to know, he said he's seen some players on tour that have their club grips built up with extra wraps of tape underneath the rubber instead of going to a mid-size or an oversized grip. And is there a benefit to using wraps of tape versus increasing the size of the grip?
Great question. It's a little difficult to answer, you know, when you're talking about should you just go with a mid-size grip or should you just use tape underneath the grip to build up the size of it. A lot's going to depend upon weighting and how you like the grip to feel. So with grips that are built to a mid-size size versus building it up with tape, most of the grips that are built to mid-size, if you use that method instead of just building up tape underneath the grip, usually those grips feel a little softer as far as just texture. When you're building up a grip using tape, that will sometimes stretch out the walls of that grip. And the end result is that the grip actually feels a little bit firmer. So if you like a softer feel, I would just go with a mid-size or a jumbo. If you like a firmer feel to your grip, I would probably use tape. The other thing that you need to consider is weighting. So how many weights or how many wraps of tape are you actually going to add to the club, and how many grams will that add to the handle versus just going with the, you know, preset med size grip that comes in at a certain weight. Most grip weights are 55 grams, somewhere in that realm. A lot of golfers have no idea what grip weight plays into overall swing weighting for a club. I see so many folks that they'll do a DIY grip job at home and they absolutely butcher their golf clubs. Now, the grips were installed correctly. They were aligned correctly. You know, the process that was used in installing the grips was done correctly. But the problem is, because what they were coming from is such a completely different weight than what they ended up going into, the swing weighting properties of the club are completely ruined, whether it's too heavy or too light. In most cases, I find it's too light. So if you're doing a grip job at home, I would advise you to understand what other factors you could be influencing by changing the grip. If you're having to use 4, 5, 6 wraps of tape, how much weight is that adding versus just going with the mid-size or oversized grip? And what are you looking for as far as a swing weight? If you're liking a heavier swing weight, then you're going to want to go with whatever option is adding the least amount of weight in the grip. If you're looking for a lighter swing weight option, then you're going to want to go with whichever solution is going to add the most weighting in the grip. So, this all reminds me of building a set of clubs for Ernie Els a few years back. This was back when he still had his Adams, irons. And have you ever heard of this one, Jonathan, as far as grip jobs?
I don't think I've ever heard of this one.
All right. So the bottom 1 inch of the grip had 8 wraps of tape.
Wait.
The bottom 2 inches had 7 wraps of tape. The bottom 6, or the bottom 3 inches had 6 wraps of tape. The bottom 4 inches had 5, and so on and so forth. So what he's basically doing here is he's building up a non-tapered grip. It actually flared a little bit when you get down towards, towards the bottom of the grip.
You think?
But the bigger thing here is 8 wraps of tape, anywhere between 6 and 8 wraps of tape on that lower section of the grip. You see some really crazy things. I'll always remember this grip job because it took like 3 rolls of tape to end up doing it. And it was quite complicated, to say the least. So obviously the Big Easy, he's got some big old catcher's mitts for hands and is accustomed to a certain feel. But, some of these elite players, they get really finicky when it comes to grip. You've mentioned Tiger feeling grip bubbles under the tape. This is something that's really important to really good players.
All right, and with that, let's get into this week's interview where Golf Senior Equipment Editor Andrew Tursky had the opportunity to speak with Callaway staffer Francesco Molinari in Palm Springs. During the chat with Molinari, he revealed what's different about the mysterious 3-diamond Maverick Sub-Zero driver that he plans to use in 2020, why he switched out of the ultra-rare Callaway Apex MB prototype irons late in the year, why he thinks equipment free agency is more popular than ever, and his new Odyssey Toulon prototype putter. Always enjoy getting to hear Francesco offer insight on his gear. Here we go.
Francesco Molinari, welcome to the Fully Equipped podcast with golf.com.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So we're here at launch week for the Maverick, the Callaway Maverick. You got the new staff bag, orange, black, gray. What do you think about the color scheme, first of all?
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. And my son's favorite color is orange, so he's going to be very happy with it.
Okay. What's been your experience so far with the new Metalwoods? Like, were you involved in the prototyping process? Have you tested it, or what are your thoughts about it?
Yeah, so I've been testing the first few prototype heads probably around October last year. Immediately my feedback to the guys was good. First thing that I look really in the new driver is the feel and the sound it makes, when you hit the ball, and that was immediately positive. And then after that initial testing, which was, just a few shots, we got a bit deeper into it about a month later, and it seems like a really good product. I would say that the first difference I noticed was the better dispersion compared to the Epic Flash. A little bit of increase in ball speed, a little bit of increase in smash factor on TrackMan, so obviously getting a little bit more efficiency from the club head. But definitely dispersion was, the biggest difference.
When they first come to you with a prototype and they ask you to test and ask your thoughts, what is that process like? Is it just like a blank head and you're just hitting a bunch of different drivers, or like what is that?
Yeah, it's they obviously look, you know, a little bit different to the finished product. Normally, no colors involved. It's just a very simple, plain head. But you know, at that stage, yeah, you're just trying to I guess, give them feedback about the feel and the sound, like I was saying, and the look of it a little bit. You know, the shape of the club head. In terms of look, it's very clean, very, I would say, very similar to what the Epic Flash was last year. Obviously, you know, then what you see and the technology there is in the head are two different things. And I think that they've done a great job, because they kept what was very good about the Epic Flash, and they've improved the areas that they could improve.
And we're out here at Palm Desert, and I know you've taken, I think you said, 7 weeks off.
Yeah.
Right now, in this bag that I'm looking at, you do have a Maverick driver. Are you going to go with the Maverick driver this week?
I think so. Obviously, you've got a couple more days to test. You know, I was testing back home in the UK in very different conditions, so it's not always easy to get it exactly right immediately. But I'll do some more work with the guys here tomorrow, you know, Tuesday and Wednesday. And yeah, I mean, my intention is to put in the bag. Then obviously we'll see how the next 2 days go.
I was checking out the driver before and looking at the hosel, and it has the three diamonds, just like last year, a little prototype. What's the difference between the three diamond and the regular head to you?
It looks a little bit different. I guess that the regular head is a bit more rounded. But in the end, you know, it's not so much the looks, it's really the you know, the ball flight you get. I guess that the triple diamond is designed probably thinking more about tour players than your average golfer. Sits very well, you know, very straight club face. And yeah, probably a little bit harder to turn over to the left compared to the standard head. So, you know, I transitioned last year into the Epic Flash immediately into the triple diamond head, and makes sense to stick with it, really. Mm-hmm.
I know you talked about not wanting to hit it left, and I know just from conversations I've had with Johnny Thompson, who's the fitter with Callaway, about your shafts. Now, you kind of go back and forth between the Tensei Blue and the Tensei White. Where are you at now, and kind of why do you use those Tenseis, and what makes you go back and forth?
Yeah, I mean, I've been using Tensei shafts on the driver for sure for the last, I think, 4 years now. I guess, you know, just when you change club head, obviously spin characteristics can be a little bit different. Obviously the white Tensei is a little bit stiffer and lower spin. The blue Tensei a little bit softer, a little bit more spin. So it's just trying to get the balance of you know, the launch and the spin right. And I was speaking to Johnny this morning, and you know, I guess it depends also, maybe beginning of the year you're not quite at top speed yet, and some of the events the temperatures, especially in the morning, are a little bit lower, so a little more spin might be useful. And then during the summer, obviously temperatures are higher, and you know, you feel a bit stronger, so you might switch into the white. So it's just, you know, the similar shaft. It's just getting the best possible combination, you know, between shaft and head, week in and week out.
Mm-hmm. It's been a little chilly in the mornings here, so you might want to go with the higher spin for this week.
Yeah.
But last time we talked was actually your first week as a Callaway staffer at Bay Hill. And you obviously won that week. Which was a pretty quick transition for you.
Yeah.
I don't know how you made a huge club change like that and won the first week. But so we talked about your irons.
Yeah.
And there were only three sets of muscle backs made. And I think they were specially made over in Japan. And you kind of set the internet on fire with those things. but I'm looking at your bag now, and you got the Callaway Apex Pro raw heads. At what point did you switch from those muscle backs to the Apex Pros?
I had the muscle backs from the 5 iron to the pitching wedge. I always had a cavity back 4 iron. And then, yeah, just during the year, tried experimenting a little bit with the 5 and the 6 to, you know, see if I could see any difference in ball flight. And I think definitely with these, obviously, you get a little bit more forgiveness, maybe a little bit more height. So yeah, towards the end of last year, I started experimenting with the shorter irons too, and decided to go with a different setup. I still have the muscle backs at home, and you never know. Again, you know, during the year, I'm the kind of guy that switches quite often along during the season. So I think sometimes it's about keeping it fresh too. You know, it's nice to have a new set of clubs in the bag. But yeah, right now I'm really happy with the Apex Pro cavity backs, and that's how I plan to start the year.
Seems like you switched clubs pretty easily. Like, you've made major club changes throughout your career. You went from full bag of Nike, full bag of TaylorMade, full bag of Callaway, changing irons drastically. What makes it so easy for you to switch? Like, some guys kind of get caught with their own gamers for so long and then get so comfortable with it. But you're ready to switch job of a dime.
Yeah, I've always been like that. I don't know. Maybe I'm not as, sensitive as some of the other guys. And
shots fired.
I just hit what I get. But no, obviously, the last year the transition was super smooth, and that's testament to the, you know, Callaway product, but also to the Callaway people that helped me during that transition. And yeah, like I was saying, I think for me many times is to keep it fresh. You know, there's no reason why if you don't experiment, you'll never be sure that you have, you know, the best that you can have in the bag. So I like to keep looking around and testing new things, and that's how I you know, set up my bag during the season.
Mm-hmm. For us here at Fully Equipped, you know, we get super into gear and the equipment space and kind of the industry as a whole, and it's just been interesting since Nike left hard goods, all those guys who were on that staff, and you look at who's out there right now, the Brooks and Tommy Fleetwoods, and you were equipment free agent for a while, but you ended up going with Callaway. Like, what do you think it is about the equipment space right now that kind of leaves guys wanting to stay free agents and not sign like major deals?
I guess, you know, it goes back to what we were saying just now. If you're a guy who really, you know, when he likes some irons or a driver or a particular putter even, and you don't really want to switch, obviously, maybe if you have a contract and you have to play pretty much a full bag of the same brand, you might not find it too easy. For guys who adapt a little bit easier, you know, it's not so much of a problem. I think for me, I mean, obviously, I enjoyed, I have to say, being a free agent after, you know, having spending a long time playing Nike clubs, just because after 12 years with Nike, I didn't know what was out there. So it was more really the curiosity and the interest in testing what was out there. I think on the other hand, when you're a free agent, obviously, you know, you get guys from a lot of companies coming to you and always trying to get you to play their clubs, and it can get a little bit confusing because you keep getting new clubs the whole time, and it's also working with different people. You know, obviously every manufacturer have got different fitters on tour. So what I like, obviously, being associated with Callaway now is knowing there's guys like Johnny that I can trust and that I enjoy working with, and he can help me, you know, get a very consistent setup throughout the bag. Maybe when you play different brands of clubs, it's not so easy to get that consistency.
Yeah, it's good to have like kind of that family atmosphere. Got people who you can trust with your clubs and stuff like that.
Definitely, yeah.
Now getting into the putter, it looks like it's different than what I saw last time. Did you make a putter change at some point that went under my radar?
Well, probably did, because I switched after the playoffs last year. So when I was back in Europe, and I mean, I loved the Toulon putters since the beginning of last year, and I've been switching between different models, but pretty much with a similar, you know, blade classical look. What I was interested in was testing the color combination of the Versa putters. So yeah, I asked them if they could make a tool on putter with the color combination, and they did. And basically what it is that by testing different putter heads and shapes, I realized that to aim the putter face, I use more the vertical lines than the lines parallel to, mm-hmm. to the hole. So I used to have a line on the putter pointing at the hole, but you almost made it harder for me to aim correctly.
Yeah.
So obviously I went for the clean look last year and the dot.
Now you got the dot on there.
Yeah. Well, I had the, I think I made the change 2 years ago, but definitely what I've seen with the Versa combination of colors, so the black, whitish gray and black again, is that, you know, it makes it even more clear for me to see where the putter head is aiming. And it actually makes it a little bit easier to square the face during the stroke. So it's been, you know, again, something that I found out through experimenting. I was putting well last year and happy with the putter, but, you know, always trying to get that little edge that might make the difference.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very visual alignment aid type putter. For people who are listening and can't see it, it's kind of like an Oreo. Except instead of the white cream filling, you got the cool matte gray, and then, you know, you got your FM stamped on the back. It's great.
Yeah, it's a beautiful looking putter. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And then we got to talk about the golf ball a little bit too.
Yeah.
I understand you've been working with some prototypes in the off season.
Yeah.
What are you looking for when you test a golf ball, and kind of what can we expect?
I think, again, you know, consistency is the biggest factor. Obviously, we all want a ball that goes longer and spins more around the greens, but and you know, not only Callaway but every manufacturer, I think, is working and striving to get that. But the biggest characteristic for me in a golf ball is consistency. So, you know, consistency and dispersion, again, in terms of right and left, obviously getting something that maybe doesn't curve as much into the wind or in side winds. And then the dispersion as well, long, short, obviously makes it a lot easier if you know your ball is going to, you know, consistently go the same distance the whole time. So yeah, obviously they came up with the new ball that I'm sure is going to be on the market soon, and seems to be a good improvement. I mean, again, I was happy with the ball I had last year with the Chrome Soft and you know, played some good golf with it, but definitely seems like the new one, it's built differently, and the effect you see on the ball flight is what we were saying, more consistency, especially long short seems to be, you know, very, very consistent. Even maybe when you don't strike it as well, it still goes a very similar distance, and that's obviously a massive thing for us to make our life easier out there on the course.
That's what it's all about. When life's easy, you can make that money.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for now, we'll just call that ball a prototype. I'm sure people will know more about it
very soon.
So looking forward into 2020 after coming off 2019, yeah, which was kind of a crazy year for you. I mean, you had the lead 54 holes at the Masters, and you kind of did that battle with Tiger Woods, which is what people like literally dream about. You know, like I've been thinking about moments like that my whole life. Are you looking forward to getting back out at the Masters, and when does that preparation come?
Yeah,
feel like you owe that course one?
No, I mean, I think, you know, obviously I went out with Tiger in Carnoustie too, and you know, first of all, like you said, it's great to be out there in a major, in the leading group, in the last group out, or close to it anyway, like we were at Carnoustie, and just, you know, enjoy the experience really. But yeah, obviously, I'm looking forward to getting back out there. There's a good number of tournaments before that, so be good like last year to have a strong start of the year and maybe get a win, you know, early in the season. But yeah, Augusta, like every other major, that they're already on our minds. But you know, it's always, again, finding that balance between getting ready for the big events coming up during the season, but also making sure you give your best every event that you're out here on the PGA Tour.
Absolutely. So last time we talked, you won that week. This time we talked, how are you feeling this week?
Well, I need to keep the tradition going, yeah. No, yeah, I feel not too dissimilar from Bay Hill last year, which was Bay Hill was the second tournament of the year, I guess. I played, well, actually third, I played Hawaii, Kapalua, but then kind of had another break and played Mexico. This time I'm coming off a pretty long break, but, you know, I've done some good work back home and, yeah, feeling pretty confident. Obviously, first week out, there's always a few question marks, but hopefully I'll get the rust off in the next couple of days and then be ready for Thursday.
Do you feel at all at a disadvantage having not played in Hawaii? Like, how do you make that decision between where you're actually going to start?
Yeah, it's never easy. And, you know, we have so many good options that you could potentially play every week and play always in great tournaments. But, you know, we need to think about the year, the season ahead. It's going to be a long year with majors and the Olympics and hopefully the Ryder Cup and, you know, a few big things coming up. So I think it's vital to have a good off season and spend the time at home to recharge and to do the kind of work that then it's really hard to do in between tournaments during the season to kind of lay the foundation for the season ahead. So I've been trying to do that. I'm really looking forward to getting back out here and playing, and hopefully I'll hit the ground running. Yeah.
Ryder Cup year, the return of Mollywood, or what? Is that already on your mind, or you kind of just focus one tournament at a time?
No, you try. Obviously, it is in on your mind, but, you know, it's a long way away, and the best way to get there, really, in my experience, is obviously playing good, consistent golf throughout the year. So the best way to do it is focusing week on week, and things usually take care of themselves. But yeah, it'd be cool, obviously, to get paired with Tommy again and see if we can play good golf as we did in France.
Last question. As an Italian, you know food really well.
Yeah.
Who's got the best food for a tour stop? Like, what city do you look forward to actually eating at? Or is there nothing that compares?
I've never been to New Orleans. I heard New Orleans is really good for food, but so far I have to say Riviera is pretty hard to beat. Yeah, you know, LA okay. and Santa Monica, they've got some really good restaurants there. So that's my number one for now.
I got you. You got a spot that you like going to around there, or you're going to keep that to yourself?
Yeah, I'll keep that to myself. There's a few Italian restaurants there that are really, really good, but, you know, sushi places, I mean, you can find anything really. So it's a fun week to be out.
I love it. All right, Francesco, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure. And, thank you.
It's always good to talk gear with you.
And many thanks to Francesco Molinari for spending 20 minutes with us on the pod. It's always great to spend time with world-class players. We look forward to seeing you for episode 27 next week on Fully Equipped. Jonathan, it's hard to believe that we've got 26 of these in the can now, right?
I know.
So for all you folks, if you're looking for more content between now and next week, feel free to follow us on our social media channels at @fully_equipped on Twitter and @fullyequippedgolf on Instagram. Until next week, catch you around.